This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. R. Buckminster Fuller was born in 1895 in Milton, Massachusetts. He went to Milton Academy and then on to Harvard, where he was kicked out for cutting classes.
Or for general irresponsibility, as Fuller himself said.
But perhaps that freed him, because Fuller went on to be one of the 20th century's most intriguing architects and inventors. He created futuristic structures, including the Dymaxion House and the Geodesic Dome.
Fuller was called a modern-day Da Vinci, a Benjamin Franklin of the space age, and also a little spacey.
I must be able to convert the resources of the earth into higher and higher capability of service. I must do more and more with less and less until I reached a point where we could do so much as to be able to service all men in respect to all of their needs.
This is the life that Oscar-nominated documentary filmmaker Sam Green is trying to bring to life, and not through conventional filmmaking. No, that would not suffice for Buckminster Fuller. Green, along with legendary indie rock band Yo La Tengo, are performing a live documentary experience on the life of Buckminster Fuller tomorrow at the Institute for Contemporary Art. It's called The Song of R. Buckminster Fuller. Sam Green joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi.
It's great to have you. And also with us in the studio, James McNew, bass player for Yo La Tengo. Great to have you. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having us.
So Sam Green, let me start with you. We just heard a little clip and music there from the love song of R. Buckminster Fuller. When we say documentary performance, what are we talking about here?
Well, that's a good question. I call it a live documentary. And what it is it's all the elements of a film, but it happens live. So I narrate the piece on stage. I do voiceover and narration and cue up images that are projected on the screen so you're seeing a film. And then the great band Yo La Tengo does a live soundtrack. Okay. So it's a live movie.
So it's not just visual. It's an entire experience.
Yeah.
Well, if we can, let's tease everyone a little bit with a tiny bit more of this live documentary. You have performed it in San Francisco, and here's a little bit of that.
Buckminster Fuller, the designer and architect and inventor, saved everything, literally everything that crossed his desk. Telegrams, letters, photos, old films and videotapes, blueprints, even some things that don't make a lot of sense.
James McNew, you're making a face here.
That's because the program was about to go blue. I'm not really sure.
Oh, don't worry.
Okay, I'm just.
I heard that part.
You know, we're strangers in your land. We don't know what the laws are.
No, this
are
is a family
here.
Program. Okay. It's all okay. But let me ask you: the music, as I was sort of dipping in and out of the San Francisco performance in preparing for today, it seems very much as a character in and of itself in this live documentary. How do you view it?
Somebody asked that last night, and I hadn't really thought about it, but I think maybe it is kind of in the way that like some movie soundtracks will have a recurring theme, and that, you know, that recurring theme will change its shape a little bit throughout the course of a movie as the story changes, and I think in a way it does. I think the fact that a sort of accordion-like length of the program, how it changes every single time we do it, and the rhythm is there, but you know, the exact count is always different, and the different pauses and different breaths that Sam delivers, and we kind of ride along with him, and it's it does feel alive.
Yeah.
And it does feel like a character.
Yeah.
I mean, I hadn't really thought about it until somebody asked us that question last
night.
Yeah,
it makes it, I mean, it makes it a slightly different thing every time. And Sam Green, that's what I'm wondering, you have mentioned in past interviews that Buckminster Fuller himself was a man who was so good at mythologizing himself in a way while he was alive. That what did you decide to explore about him that he hadn't already sort of set a narrative for, you know, while he was alive?
Well, he certainly was great at self-mythology and had told the story of his life millions of times. And there's a certain sort of pat version out there that comes from him still. And I base this piece on his papers, his collection of papers, which are at Stanford University, and they're fascinating. It's a huge, huge collection, and spent some time going through them and trying to sort of parse his life and his ideas in a more sophisticated, slightly critical way, but it's, in the end, a celebration of him. I am very charmed by him, and he's a fascinating figure, so it's just sort of a more contemporary look at who he was.
Well, in fact, what I appreciate is it seems, and we're not going to give anything away here, but you do actually explore rather intimately, you know, his personal tragedies as well. I mean, there's a moment in the live documentary, where you describe how Fuller's first daughter dies at the age of 4, right in his arms, of spinal meningitis, and not long after that, he goes to Lake Michigan thinking he's going to kill himself. And here's what you describe what happens.
But right there on the shore of Lake Michigan, Bucky had a mystical experience. A voice told him to dedicate himself to humanity instead. In some versions of the story, he even levitated. Right then and there, Bucky decided to dedicate himself to a 50-year experiment to see what a single person could do on behalf of all humankind.
Sam Green, that moment in itself, just listening to it, is very powerful. But I imagine, is there something particular about the live documentary where you have Viola Tango on stage creating this music as they're going? There's images of Fuller and you, a live human narrator connecting to the audience, that really takes people even deeper in those moments in particular.
I hope so. I really like this form. It's an odd form, but I like it, and I'm interested in it because for filmmakers today, you have to accept the fact that many people, maybe most people, are going to be watching your work on a laptop, a little laptop, while they're checking their email, or on an iPad, you know, on the subway. And I don't think that's necessarily a very meaningful context in which to see something. I really am in love with the magic of cinema and that experience when you go somewhere and sit in a room with strangers and turn your phone off and the lights go down and you give yourself over to the experience and it washes over you. And that's a great way to see things and experience things. And so this sort of makes sure that it's going to be that way.
Well, James McNew, on that point, Viola Tango has had great experience writing soundtracks for movies like Junebug and Adventureland. But this isn't like that. This is completely different. It's not as if you're writing a soundtrack, performing it, and then handing it off for post-production and crossing your fingers. I mean, you're very much, you are the movie, part of the movie, essentially.
This is way more fun. this just feels so fresh and really kind of vital, I think, to perform. I was just thinking that a lot of the pieces, I think there's 10 pieces of music that we do throughout the program, and the program is roughly an hour in length, so there's really rarely a time that we stop playing, and some of it is rehearsed. The timing and the structure is generally rehearsed, but a lot of the music that we play within the documentary is very loosely structured, and so it is the three of us listening to each other and listening to Sam and watching the images, and it is very much happening now, and a lot of the soundtrack work is kind of it's all computer based and it's all kind of strategic.
Soundtrack works for conventional.
Oh yeah, yeah, for, right. for the Suits. as opposed to Sam. I'm sure. Kelly and Phil are gonna love being called Suits. That's great. Thanks, guys. Sorry about that.
If I may, we're gonna run out of time here pretty soon. I just want to sneak in one last question.
Sure.
For you, Sam, and that is that you've said that you try to tailor the performance for the cities that it's going to be in. San Francisco, Seattle, et cetera. In Boston, it makes a lot of sense how you do that because Buckminster Fuller is from here.
Yeah.
But how have you done it for other places? How do you make it relevant for Seattle?
Well, Seattle Seattle, there was this great dome, the Laser Dome, that was built in the late 50s, and it was this geodesic dome, and now there's laser light shows in it. So far at every place we've done it, there's something that you can work into it. We did a show in Columbus, Ohio last night. There was a big dome nearby, and we worked that into it. But Boston is easy. This is the place. There's almost too much stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he's buried at Mount Auburn Cemetery.
It starts and it ends here.
It ends here. Well, if you want to know what happened in between, you're going to have to see it at the Institute for Contemporary Art. Sam Green is an Oscar-nominated documentarian. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. This has been nice.
And James McNew, bassist for Yola Tango. So great to have you in the studio. We'll have to have you and the rest of the band back sometime. Thanks so much.
Sure. Thank you.
They'll both be performing The Love Song of R. Buckminster Fuller on Saturday at the ICA. There's more information at radioboston.org. And before we go, let's sign off with a little bit more from Buckminster Fuller himself and a prediction he made before his death in 1983, one that he had hoped would come true.
I can now make a categorical statement, which is really quite exciting, that with the resources we've already mined and are continually recirculating, the metals come around again, with the knowledge we already have, it is feasible within 10 years, if we undertake to do it on our part of our planet, feasible within 10 years to have all humanity enjoying a higher standard of living than anybody's ever known or dreamt of before, during which time we can phase out altogether all further use of all fossil fuels, all atomic energy, that we can live entirely on our energy income. This means then we can look out for all the generations to come instead of using up the savings account and then have nothing left over for our children and grandchildren.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.